Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk About It here on Jamestown 107.1. We are streaming at newsdakota.com, and of course you can listen back to the podcast anytime there at newsdakota.com. Those are always available. Well, we're going to talk about a special week coming up. It is EMS week. Andrew Berkey is with me right now from Jamestown Ambulance. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me here.
Good to have you here, man. And it's an important week to honor EMS. And if people aren't familiar with the acronym EMS, you can explain what it is.
Yeah, so EMS week, Emergency Medical Services, is it's usually in May every year. I believe it started in 1974 or something like that. Just a week to for the community and to recognize the sacrifice that these men and women make. Being part of that first responder family, fire, you know, gets their week and PD. And so it's just a moment for everyone to just kind of pause and realize that sometimes that ambulance that we take for granted comes at a great cost to the providers, to, you know, their mental well-being, their physical well-being, that it's not easy to do this job. And sometimes it's very easy to take it for granted because when you call, it always shows up. Mm-hmm. And that comes at a high price.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, all of us can say, you know, all of us that are working, you know, we could say, oh, I had an off day today. You know, I wasn't, you know, I had one of those days where I just really wasn't all, the, you know, it just wasn't my day. First responders like yourself can't really have days like that because you're dealing with lives in your hands.
Right. It's, you know, they put a large amount of training in. I don't think the public truly realizes how large the scope of practice is for an EMS provider. Someone trained to the paramedic level, you know, they're starting IVs, they're given cardiac medications, pain medications, medications where if you mess up that dosage, there are very severe consequences that come with that. So what they're responsible for on a daily basis, call to call to call, is very large, and there's a large amount of stress and responsibility that comes with that. So, and to your point, I mean, you can have a bad day, you can have a bad call, but you better have a short memory because the next call is coming. So these guys, they got to be incredibly resilient, disciplined, and task oriented because you don't get a lot of time to sit and process a bad day or a bad moment. You got to move to the next one and then, you know, have these healthy systems in place so you can process those things later.
You know, it's second nature anymore now with people. When you're outside, you're doing something, you'll hear sirens. You know, it happens all the time. There's always sirens going on, especially in a city the size of Jamestown or even larger, of course. But you don't understand that's when you guys are going to work. So, I mean, that is a lot. There's a lot of calls.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, we don't use our sirens that often. I would venture to say less than 10% of the time, unless they're having a heart attack, a stroke, or a major traumatic accident, we don't use them.
Wow.
And that's a whole other conversation. Just studies show that lights and sirens aren't that beneficial. So when you hear those sirens going off, that's only for the worst of the worst types of calls.
Wow.
We try to go what we call routine as much as possible for everyone's safety. But it's, You tend not to listen. I myself, if I'm at home and I'm not on duty, I hear the siren. I don't really think about it. It's just kind of in the background. But if you really stop and pause for a second, a lot of people say when they see an ambulance come by with lights and sirens and they pull over, they stop and they say a prayer or something because what that vehicle is going to, I mean, it could be incredibly significant.
Right. And the thing is, men and women that are first responders, you don't know from day to day. You never know from day to day what you're going to be walking in on.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the selling points. I never wanted to work a job where you do the same thing over and over and over again. I love waking up and not knowing what's coming, which probably why all of us are anxious all the time. But and sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing, but it's unpredictable. And and because it's unpredictable, again, it just raises that level of responsibility. You don't know if you're going to treat a pediatric patient today, but you better be ready to. You don't know if you're going to go to a multi-casualty car accident, but you better be ready to. So because you don't know what's coming, you have to be prepared in every asset of your job at every moment because you don't know what's coming.
Absolutely. And you mentioned it kind of at the beginning when we first started talking about the wide scope of different things that you as EMS does. I mean, talk about the training that goes into this because it's pretty extensive.
Yeah, so in Jamestown, you have EMTs and paramedics. They're typically partners on a truck. EMT you know, they're called basic life support providers. They can work with some medications, do some injections and stuff like that. Paramedics, they can intubate people. They can do a procedure called RSI, where we chemically paralyze and sedate someone so that we can introduce a breathing device down their trachea and help breathe for them. There's cardiac meds. There's defibrillation, where you shock the heart. There's cardioversion and cardiac pacing. There's cricothyrotomies, which everyone sees on TV and thinks it's super cool, and in fact, it's incredibly scary. The scope of practice is just, it's huge. It would take a long time to sit and talk about what these guys can do in that ambulance. Paramedic training's typically a year and a half. There's some longer programs out there. They really do shoulder a lot of responsibility in their skill set.
I grew up in a small town in North Dakota. So, I remember our ambulance service as being, you know, local people that we knew that had a pager on, you know, yeah, and they'd walk around and they were just pretty much like, okay, well, I'm on call. It's like a volunteer type situation, almost kind of like a volunteer fire department or something like that. But when you're talking about now, they're, you know, what is the work schedule like for you guys that, you know, this is what you do all the time?
Yeah, right. This is our profession. Right. So there's a huge scope across the country where you got volunteer services. They maybe run, you know, 10, 20 calls a year. And then you got places like Jamestown, they're running 2,400 calls a year. New Orleans is running like 40,000 calls a month. It's crazy. There's a wide spectrum of it. Jamestown does incorporate, you know, some on-call work. We're kind of in this, we're kind of at this tipping point where we are a busy enough service where obviously we have full-time providers and this is what they do for a living. But we're not, you know, Bismarck busy or Fargo busy necessarily. Mm-hmm. So these guys do commit a lot of hours, a mix between being, you know, ready to go in a moment's notice or being at home and on call and ready to respond that way. So it's kind of a blended schedule, but these guys, they give, you know, half of their life to this profession. Maybe not necessarily physically working, but being ready to work. And that carries a whole other load of stresses with it. You know, if you're at home and you're with your family, you might have to leave that dinner table. You might have to leave that birthday party. You might have to skip out on movie night that you were really hoping to be able to attend. So again, when I say the general public will never truly understand the sacrifices these people make, is because they don't see those moments, and they shouldn't have to. You know, we're public servants. We've agreed to do this. But that doesn't mean it's not difficult.
Absolutely. And you talk about being difficult. One of the questions I've always had, my dad was a police officer. So, you know, growing up with somebody like that in the house, you know that there are times when they don't want to say anything. They don't want to talk. You know, they just want to be, you know, you just leave them alone because they have to decompress with stuff that they've dealt with. Right. So how is a person that sees trauma and things all the time, how do you not take that home with you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and a question I think we've been afraid to talk about for a really long time. And you do take it home with you. You know, you have to. And I think the mentality for a long time was, I'm this way, if I'm being really honest. I'm not going to talk about my work with my partner, my spouse, or my child, because I don't want them to see that world. I want to protect them from that. But you're not protecting yourself. At some point you got to talk to somebody. And what's important is having a balance between talking to fellow EMS providers, because those are really the only people in this world who understand you. But then also talking to people who are not in EMS, because those are the people, that ground you to your humanity. They're when you tell them something that, you know, maybe I just got home from a really bad car accident, but I've done hundreds of car accidents, so it doesn't mean a whole lot to me, right? Because I'm kind of callous to it. Mm-hmm. But when I tell it to my partner, and they're just blown away by it, and they're, oh, you know, that's what roots you to your humanity. That's what ties you to those human emotions that have maybe been dulled down inside of you a bit as a way to cope and survive within the profession. So it's really important to have that system, to know the people in and out of EMS who you can talk to and relate to, so that you don't lose that humanity. That's a huge problem right now. Mental health in EMS and police and fire is huge. And we're finally starting to talk about it within our industries. Now we need our governments to catch up and put the support pieces in place so that we can get help more easily and continue to break down these stigmas. Because usually there is no world where you don't bring this stuff home. This stuff is with you forever.
Yeah, I can only imagine it. We're talking with Andrew Berkey, Jamestown Ambulance. Of course, EMS week is coming up. When is the week, and what's going on as a part of it?
Yeah, so this year it's May 21st through 27th. Ringdoll EMS, we try to find fun ways to recognize our crews. I don't know if they appreciate it or not, but I usually get in a nice pair of short, you know, jean shorts and wash their cars out in the parking lot where the public can get a good view too. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to do it this year. I've been using the same pair of shorts, and they seem to keep getting tighter every year. So, but we do fun things like that. We'll do cookouts and stuff, and we got some gifts and stuff lined up for them. But then we also try to engage the community. So each day has a different theme. And actually, I haven't even looked at the themes for this year, but we try to put educational content out on our social media platforms and stuff so that the community can get a look into this window a little bit. And, I think at the end of the day, and they'll never admit this, if you ask them, they don't want to be thanked. They don't want the recognition or the appreciation, but it means the world to them. Think about being invested in someone's well-being, but not getting to know the outcome, right? More often than not, we drop someone off at the ER. They might be really sick. They might be really hurt, and we might not get to know if they lived or they died. And to carry that, or for someone to stop in the grocery store or just to wave and smile and say thank you for what you do, they'll never admit it, but that makes their day. It really does, and it's fuel that keeps them driven and passionate about what they do. So if you ask them that, they're going to deny a tooth and nail because that's how they are. But I guarantee you, it makes their day.
What if people, listening to this and they're thinking, that's something that I've always thought I wanted to do, but I don't know if I could do it. What are the steps that you need to do if you wanted to get into this world, if you wanted to get into, to become an EMS?
Yeah. It's interesting because we all kind of have our own origin story. I had no interest in healthcare. In high school, I didn't care about biology and anatomy. I was a political science major in college, and I just experienced something in my life that wasn't great. And I took an EMT class to kind of take up my time, and I fell in love with it. Other people are intentional when they reach out. They've always known that this is what they want to do. So we all come from different walks of life and our stories are all different, but they're all incredibly awesome. The first step is to get your EMT done. You have to have a high school diploma. You have to have a really clean driving record, right? Who would have thought? You gotta be a good driver. You take a EMT program. We offer two, a year here, one in the fall, one in the spring. They're 3-month programs. So you can get that done relatively quickly and then get to work, start experiencing it and seeing what it is firsthand. And then from there, you can decide. Some people, they want to stay at the EMT level, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then others, they move on to paramedic school where they have a little bit more tools in the tool bag to work with. And we joke that people just get the bug for it. They come, they do a ride along. Or maybe they were out driving and they watched a car accident and they just had this feeling like, I want to be able to help. You hear that story all the time. It's something deep down inside of you that says that you're here to help people. And then through whatever circumstances they walk through the door. And yeah, we're tied to that. We joke all the time that, what we would do in a different life. But if we're being honest, this is what we're meant to do.
Absolutely. And 100%. If people want to get more information about you guys and what you do, you mentioned social media. How do they find you?
Yeah, so I don't know. I may be getting old now because I hear Facebook's not the cool thing anymore. But we're most active on Facebook. We got Jamestown Area Ambulance Facebook page. Our education department, Jamestown EMS Education, has its own Facebook page if you want to get information on CPR courses, EMT classes, things like that. We put a lot of content out there. Our website is www.ringdollems.com. There's some stuff out there as well, but yeah, we try to stay active with the social media. I'm gonna have to turn it over to someone else though, because I think Twitter's the thing now, and I don't know, I can't keep up with all of it. Someone's like, you gotta make a TikTok account. I was like, no.
Oh man, Andrew, anything else you want to add here?
I just first of all, thank you for letting me be here. I love coming up here and getting ready for EMS week. I love to end with thanking my staff, my EMTs, and my paramedics, who I couldn't ask for a better group of people to do this with. It's an absolute honor to lead them and watch them grow as people and individuals, and all the other first responders out there. Just, please take care of yourself. We did lose one of our EMTs a couple weeks ago to suicide, and it's such a tough industry. It really is, and it's. I want all the providers out there to know that, you can come to us, to keep your head up and to reach out. It's, no one's walking this line by themselves.
Well, amen to that. Andrew, thanks for coming in, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Andrew Berkey, Jamestown Area Ambulance there on another edition of Let's Talk About It here on Jamestown 107.1 FM.